SBS live streams and podcasts are supported by advertising.
SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged, and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes. Our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales@sbs.com.au.
Most of us might be familiar with the term the war on drugs. In the US, it's been waged since the 1970s when then-President Richard Nixon signed the Controlled Substances Act and declared drug abuse as public enemy number one. But today, it's not so much illicit drugs but prescription medication that the US is fighting, with deaths from prescription opioids reaching crisis levels. Authorities in Australia have been keen to avoid a similar emergency here, introducing restrictions in 2020 to limit their supply. In this episode of the Two Hard Baskets series, SBS looks at how effective these changes have been so far and what else needs to be done. Last year, former Purdue Pharma Director David Sackler testified in a US House Oversight Committee hearing on the prescription opioid crisis that had overtaken America.
OxyContin is a medicine that Purdue intended to help people, and it has helped and continues to help millions of Americans. Far too many lives have been destroyed by addiction and abuse of opioids, including OxyContin.
The problems with synthetic opioid use in the US have largely been traced to medicinal prescribing practices, a finding that has caused some concern in Australia. Between 1990 and 2014, there was a fourfold increase here in the prescription of opioids and also a rise in accidental drug-related deaths from those medications that's outpaced the national road toll. GP Danielle McMullen is the Vice President of the Australian Medical Association.
Leading up to these opioid changes, we in Australia, like many parts of the world, were seeing an increase in challenging use of prescription opioids, and whether that's overuse or misuse, and certainly just expanding use of prescription opioids.
Tighter restrictions on prescription and supply were introduced in 2020 by the Therapeutic Goods Administration, or TGA, in a bid to address the potential harm of opioids. That meant new limits on pack sizes and dosage amounts covered under the Pharmaceutical Benefits Scheme, the government sending letters to thousands of GPs telling them their opioid prescriptions were being monitored. States and territories also made their own moves, introducing real-time checking of prescriptions. Dr. Hester Wilson from the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners says that this means GPs and healthcare workers are able to see exactly what medications a patient has been prescribed.
If I have a patient that comes in to me and I look on SafeScript, I can see their high-risk medicines. So that will include benzodiazepines, will include opioids. Depending on the state and territory that you're in, there are also some other potential high-risk medicines that might be on there as well. And it's both private and PBS scripts because it comes from both prescribing and dispensing data.
But how effective have these changes been? A spokesperson for the Federal Department of Health issued this statement to SBS, which argues the TGA restrictions have started to have the desired effect.
The TGA is working with the Health Economics and Research Division of the Department of Health and Aged Care to evaluate the overall impact of the 2020 opioid reforms and other policies as new data sets become available. Interim data from the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare shows that in 2020 to 21, opioid-related hospitalisation had decreased to 6,690, down from 9,194 in 2015. In 2017, there were 1,370 deaths caused by opioids, and this fell to 946 in 2021.
Dr. Ben Daniels from the University of New South Wales has just completed a study about the impact of the TGA restrictions. He says there are now fewer opioids being prescribed under the PBS, but some people have opted to still access these medications by paying full price.
Some common ones include things like codeine, which many people have probably received at some point. Tramadol is another one. Oxycodone is another common opioid medicine. All of these medicines can also be accessed outside of the PBS through private prescriptions. And it looks like some people did move to the private market to avoid PBS restrictions, because PBS restrictions only apply to the PBS.
Dr. Wilson says there's been a positive shift in the medical community on their willingness to prescribe opioid pain relief, but there is still some concern the pendulum has swung from practitioners being generally too permissive to too cautious.
In the background there has been this a lot of teaching and education and a kind of a cultural shift around the use of opioids. And what you want to try and get out of that is this kind of middle road that goes, we make a good assessment. We are the ones that are making that assessment with our patients, and we're best placed to do that. So we don't want to have it so massively controlled and crushed that people who need it can't get it, but that we're also looking at the risks and the benefits of this medication. So that was the other thing, the shift, you know, from very permissive opiophilic prescribing to being quite opiophobic, that, you know, that do people miss out on treatment that they actually need and should get.
John Ryan is the CEO of the Pennington Institute, which produced a report on overdose deaths in 2023. He says we don't yet have the balance right on our approach to prescription opioids, and that government policies have simply encouraged some doctors to close their books.
The doctors are obviously worried, well, A, about being misinformed by their patients, because there was a lot of that going on in the last 10 or 15 years, and doctors really rely on a trusting relationship with the patients. But I think the bigger problem is that we've got a tendency in Australia to take a big stick approach to drug issues, and in the prescription space we've also implemented a lot of changes to supply without actually carefully improving the demand management.
The demand for opioids appears to be largely driven by the numbers of people with chronic long-term pain, which affects around 3.4 million Australians, more than half of whom are women. SBS has previously reported that gender bias has often stopped these women from getting effective, timely treatment. The government's own End Gender Bias survey, which more than 2,500 women responded to, finding that two-thirds of women experience this in health systems. For women with a disability or from the LGBTQIA+ community, the figure jumps to a staggering 80%. Kate Sear is a professor at the Australian Research Centre in Sex, Health and Society at La Trobe University and deputy chair of the Victorian Pain Inquiry. She says it's hoped the inquiry can find solutions to a complex problem.
2 in 5 women live with chronic pain that adversely affects their health and well-being. We know that there are also often differences for women who might be Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander, women from LGBTQIA+ populations, trans women, etc. So essentially one of the things that we're going to look at through this pain inquiry is not just the experiences of women, but look at them through that what we call intersectional lens, how experiences might be different for people of different ages, racial and ethnic backgrounds, sexualities and so on, and then try to generate a set of recommendations for how we can address all of those women's needs.
But it's not just discrimination that can be an issue. Dr. McMullen says GPs can provide access to alternative therapies through chronic disease management plans, with rebates available for mental health consultations, exercise physiologists and physiotherapists who can support the recovery process. Susie Teagan from the National Rural Health Alliance says many patients are physically or financially unable to reach these services.
When patients want to access a clinician, it is very difficult to access that service because for a clinician it's very difficult to cover the running costs of a practice if you're just receiving Medicare funding or, you know, grant funding. We're hoping that in the budget there will be some changes.
Publicly available data suggests that overdose deaths are consistently higher in regional areas than in metropolitan centres and in socio-economically disadvantaged postcodes. Ms Teagan says a massive injection of funding is required for regional and rural health services to enable patients to build relationships with trusted health professionals. She estimates rural health is underfunded to the tune of $6.55 billion every year.
There is a massive underspend of healthcare in rural, remote and regional Australia. And that is partly because of the maldistribution of the health workforce. And that significantly contributes to the low mortality rate. We don't have enough doctors, nurses, allied health professionals, dentists, pharmacists in rural and remote Australia. And that is why the burden of disease is 1.4 times greater in rural, remote and regional Australia compared to the cities.
The Pennington Institute's 2023 overdose report also indicates that most people who died from overdoses had more than one drug in their system, most commonly benzodiazepines. Researchers say most of these deaths are unintentional and that more study is needed to determine how and why these drugs are being mixed and what role prescribing practices or a patient's history and risk profile might play in these outcomes. Meanwhile, Julia Jones from advocacy organisation Pain Australia says she believes that it doesn't have to be an either-or situation when it comes to prescription opioids, with doctors and patients choosing between those medications and other therapies. She says the crisis of misuse versus the importance of appropriate use are two distinct issues and need to be dealt with separately.
When you take something away when there is no replacement, it just creates distress. So while we accept that there needed to be some changes, the way it was done was not really appropriate, and the outcome is a very distressed cohort who were pretty distressed already.
Deborah Rourke, SBS News.
Hey, scientists, how critical is pure water to you? In this new podcast, Lab Water Stories Unfiltered, we at Millipore Sigma look closer at this often overlooked lab essential. Tune in as experts drop tips and insights not found in textbooks, taken from their work with MilliQ Lab Water Solutions. Lab Water Stories Unfiltered. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. Millipore Sigma is the U.S. and Canada life science business of Merck KGaA Darmstadt, Germany.